Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works thy hand hath made, I see the stars, I hear the mighty thunder, the power throughout the universe displayed. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. When through the woods and forest glades I wander, and hear the birds sing sweetly in the tree, when I look down from lofty mountain grandeur, and hear the brook and feel the gentle breeze, then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. And when I think that God his Son not sparing sent him to die, I scarce can take it in that on the cross my burden gladly bearing he bled and died to take away my sin. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. When Christ shall come with shout of acclamation and take me home, what joy shall fill my heart. Then shall I bow in humble adoration and there proclaim, my God, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. That song was dedicated to Valerie Banks Adebayo, who died on September 27th. Valerie was the organist at Church of the Intercession, where I used to attend and my mom used to attend for many, many years. This was one of the hymns that she played frequently, and it was played by Valerie at my mom's memorial service in 2014. I will be visiting St. Benedict's, where Valerie went after Church of the Intercession closed. I'll be attending her funeral on Saturday, and I wanted to honor her tonight. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so be sure to head on over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. find that donation button and use it. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wertman, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. So this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in northern Minnesota, in Cleveland, Ohio, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Des Moines, Iowa, and wherever you are. Now available, the October edition of Penn Magazine, The Truth About 9/11 and Sandy Hook, also poetry by Michael Annis and more. The October edition of Penn Magazine, PENNmagazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferruggio. Philip joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. He's a very talented writer. He has his own show. It's The Empire Stupid, and that's also the name of his column here. And here he goes.
Okay, good evening, Working Stiffs. The two-party food fight. This is from Wikipedia. The torture memos, sometimes called the Bybee Memo or 8102 interrogation opinion, was a term originally applying to a set of three legal memoranda drafted by John Yoo as Deputy Assistant Attorney General and signed by Assistant Attorney General Jay Bybee, head of the Office of Legal Counsel. They advised the Central Intelligence Agency, the U.S. Department of Defense, and the President on the use of enhanced interrogation techniques, better known to we working stiffs as torture. The above information reaffirms what was being conducted deep inside the White House and Justice Department in the aftermath of 9/11. Interesting, because guess who worked in that White House as Associate White House Counsel from 2001 to 2003? Oh my goodness, none other than Brett Kavanaugh. At his hearing for judgeship for the D.C. Court of Appeals in 2006, Brett answered more than once that he had no knowledge of any such memos and protocols created by John Yoo, Jay Bybee, and Alberto Gonzalez, to name but just a few inside that administration. I guess that when it came to legal matters, like attempting to circumvent the Geneva Accords and semi-legally legitimatize torture of detainees, an associate White House legal counsel, a lawyer, would not be privy to such plans. Anybody want to buy a bridge I have selling in Brooklyn? Not only did Brett Kavanaugh not acknowledge his being part of that scenario when questioned in 2006, but he used what the mob guys from my old town of Brooklyn, New York, would do by being D&D, deaf and dumb, when questioned recently by Senator Leahy as his confirmation hearing. He was D&D. I have been told that lying about these matters is a criminal offense. Not only did disqualifying a candidate for the court, but possibly offering jail time. Putting aside the possible criminal charges, how in the hell can any U.S. senator vote to confirm a man who would behave this way? These are your and my elected officials who are supposed to defend the Constitution and what it stands for. I have tremendous anger for Senator Rand Paul, the phony libertarian who loves to rail against our phony wars and use of torture, and then goes along with the rest of the gang and votes for this clown. On the flip side, why in the hell did the senators opposing Kavanaugh's confirmation, why did they not use the one-week waiting period while the FBI investigated the sexual assault charges to trumpet the torture memo discrepancies by Kavanaugh? Folks, the guy must have been lying not once but twice. During the hearings, why did the Democrats not use the famous bully pulpit afforded them by the mainstream media to lambast and, more importantly, to educate the American public? No, they decide to play the one wild card of sexual perversion over drinking to get Kavanaugh, and it failed. You see, what this food fight has always been about is getting elected and staying in power. These two parties care about that more than anything else. They sell the sucker public into thinking that they want to get elected and in power to help the suckers. Once again, that bridge I'm selling is awfully attractive. This whole scenario, when the layers of that onion are pulled apart, is about elections, period. You see, the Democrats are banking on enough Americans to believe Professor Ford over Brett and thus do the right thing to support their party in November. Why confuse the public on the torture memos? They, the Democrats, and of course the Republicans, know that sexual scandals get the attention of the suckers, not scandals involving a few hundred ragheads getting waterboarded and other assorted tortures. No. Sadly, many polls have shown that to be true, during our eternal war on terror, these things are all valid. On abortion, see if I am correct in time to come. The Republicans will play their base and push for overturning Roe versus Wade, but they will back off when they see the overwhelming mass of women taken to the streets and political offices in protest. Once again, the Republicans want to get reelected, and that comes first. The wizards who run this empire really don't give a rat's ass about pro-life or pro-choice or gay and women's rights that much. No. They care about keeping this military-industrial empire powerful here and overseas. It's the military spending and the bases worldwide that matters to them. On the domestic issues, the empire wants to keep we working stiffs inside of their virtual prison of lowest possible wages and fewest possible benefits with lots of personal debt. To them, private property rights always will choke off public property rights. The more there are residential housing renters, the better, since their subprime scam already has been played out. They know that it's both of these political parties that always walk in lockstep to support the empire. This is why both parties joined in repeatedly to pass for more and more military spending, Wall Street bailouts, and maintaining a private health insurance care system, which Obamacare really was about. Trump serves them for now until they check the weather reports and find a new front man from either party. Thank you.
And now, you might be a terrorist, with our radio actors Gracie Allen, Bud Abbott, the Andrews Sisters, Cliff Arquette, George Gobel, Gene Autry, Jim Backus, Lucille Ball, and Ethel and Lionel Barrymore. Sponsored by Powder Milk Democrat Gonads. Heavens, they're pasty. If you are a good American, then with all the poking and probing, you might well be asking yourself, am I a terrorist? Well, the Center for American Studies has put together a handy brochure now available in most U.S. interstate rest areas called Mommy, Am I a Terrorist? Some samples from the popular pamphlet. If you are driving past a policeman in the U.S., you might be a terrorist. If your Reader's Digest subscription is expired, you might be a terrorist. If you order a salad, you might be a terrorist. If you are walking down the street, you might be a terrorist. If your American flag on your front porch flapping in the good old American seals and crofts summer breeze is not larger than a circus tent, you might be a terrorist. If you are paying for weapons that are killing young children, the people of any country, paying for a missile that hits the home of a family, rips their arms and legs from their bodies, their heads from their shoulders, and forever destroys the lives of their extended family, you might be a terrorist. And now for another episode of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Pierogi Cart. Grandma Kalashnikov writes on her website her most recent column, Fight the Power or Get Used to Your Shackles. Deceit spurts from war like blood spurts from a knife. The first casualty of war is the simple truth. People are more afraid to tell the truth in wartime because killing is going on and people are afraid of sudden death. This is the emotional basis of the endless war on terrorism, which is an ideological fraud from beginning to end. Al Gore allowed the election to be stolen from him. People can be afraid to object, but they should be more afraid to lay down their lives and their children's lives in service to lies. It's ridiculous when you consider the fact that RFK specifically tore Thane Eugene Caesar's necktie off before he expired, and yet the utter fabrication that Sirhan Sirhan had anything whatsoever to do with his murder besides playing the role of a distraction can't be reconciled. I would say that it's all about control. It's about maintaining the illusion of democracy. That is not out of fear of the population. It is out of expediency. Poppy Bush once spoke of the end of history as a noble goal. Some of his son's operatives, in their unintended truthfulness, spoke of creating realities. It is much easier to control opinion in a reality of one's own making. These specialists have melded psychology, marketing, and communications into a suffocating brew. Indeed, the real idea of the CIA was not for intelligence gathering. It was as a shadow government operation with cover to facilitate the wishes of the elite. The public government is a stage play. It is a distraction. The news functions as a sporting event designed to engage the audience in the competition between two imaginary forces and their reaction to manufactured events. I think all of that is beyond question. The real question is, what is one to do about it? Like a magician's trick, once the methods are exposed, it is impossible to duplicate the effect. Awareness is the key. On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, sponsored by Powdered Milk Piroshki. Heavens, they're tasty and expeditious.
A new post by Mark, the most dangerous blogger on the planet Earth. An Israeli expert on terrorism and covert assassination procedures explains that the alleged Russian GRU attack on the Skripals with a supposedly deadly nerve agent is a completely obvious hoax to anyone who knows anything at all. The official story, says the expert, is stupidity on stupidity. I agree with him. The question is, why did the British government think that they could get away with such an obvious hoax? The answer is that the people in Western countries don't know anything about anything. They live in a world in which their reality is a product of the propaganda fed to them by news organizations and Hollywood movies. They only receive controlled explanations. Therefore, they know nothing about how everything really functions. Read the account by the Israeli expert to understand the vast difference between the British government's hoax and the reality of how an assassination is conducted. The Israeli expert got me to wondering why the British government thought anyone would fall for such a transparently false story. Having just read David Ray Griffin and Elizabeth Woodworth's new book, 9/11 Unmasked, and David Ray Griffin's 2017 book, Bush and Cheney, How They Ruined America and the World, the answer became obvious. The British government had watched the idiot Western populations fall for the official 9/11 conspiracy theory, in which a few Saudi Arabians who could not fly airplanes and without the support of any intelligence agency caused the entire security apparatus of the United States to fail utterly, and no one was held responsible for the total failure. The British government concluded that anyone who could possibly believe such an obviously false story would believe anything. I remember coming to that conclusion years ago, before the official conspiracy theory in the 9/11 Commission report was blown to pieces by thousands of scientists, structural engineers, high-rise architects, military and civilian pilots, first responders on the scene, and a large number of former high government officials, both in the U.S. and abroad. At first, I did not connect the Zionist neoconservatives' plot outlined in their public writings to destroy 7 Middle Eastern countries in 5 years, and their statement that they needed a new Pearl Harbor to implement their plan with the attack on the World Trade Center. But as I watched the Twin Towers blow up floor by floor, it was completely obvious these were not buildings falling down due to asymmetrical structural damage and limited low-temperature office fires that probably did not even warm the massive steel structure to the point of being warm to the touch. When you watch the videos, you see buildings blowing up. It's clear as day. You see each floor blow. You see steel beams and other debris fly out the sides as projectiles. It's amazing that any human is so completely stupid as to think that what he's seeing with his own eyes are buildings falling down from structural damage. It required many years before half of the American people realized that the official count was pure bullshit. A polls indicate a majority of people do not believe the official 9/11 propaganda any more than they believe the Warren Commission report on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the alleged Gulf of Tonkin attack, or the report from Admiral McCain, father of John, erasing Israel's responsibility for the destruction of the USS Liberty and its crew during LBJ's administration, or that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, or Iran had nukes, or the many lies about Syria, Libya's Gaddafi, or Somalia, or Yemen, or the Russian invasion of Georgia, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But at each time, the idiot population, no matter how many times they'd learned that the government lied to them initially, believed the next lie, thereby permitting the lie to become fact. Thus, the idiot Western populations created their own world of controlled explanations. Only a deranged person could believe anything any Western government says, but the Western world has a huge number of deranged people. There are plenty of them to validate the next official lie. The ignorant fools make it possible for Western governments to continue their policy of lies that are driving the world to extinction in a war with Russia and China. Perhaps I'm being too hard on the insouciant Western populations. Ron Unz is no moron, yet he accepted the transparently false 9/11 story until he started to pay attention. Once he paid attention, he realized it was false. Like myself, Ron Unz has noticed that the 9/11 truth movement has succeeded in totally discrediting the official 9/11 story. But the unanswered question remains, who did it? Unz says it was Israel, not Bush and Cheney. This is also the position of Christopher Bolin. Seems certain that Israel was involved. We have the fact of the Mossad agents caught celebrating as they filmed the collapse of the WTC towers. Obviously, they knew in advance, were set up, ready to film. Later, they were shown on Israeli TV where they stated they'd been sent to film the destruction of the building. We also have the fact of the large profits made by someone that the U.S. government continues to protect on shorting the stock of the airlines, the planes of which were allegedly hijacked. In other words, the 9/11 attack was known in advance, as was the destruction of WTC Building 7, as evidenced by the BBC reporter standing in front of the still-standing building announcing its destruction about a half hour before it occurred. Unz and Ballin's case against Israel is powerful. I agree with Unz that George W. Bush was not part of the plot. If he had been, he would have been on the scene directing America's heroic response to the first and only terrorist attack on America. But instead, Bush was moved out of the way and kept out of the way while Cheney handled the situation. Thank you.
www.thewhitehouse.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have again received word from Randall from Stevens Point. I got my gun in my truck. I told you I'm heading for the woods and up the mountain. Well, I'm going up the mountain a bit later. Right now I'm sitting in the UN Security Council in the empty United States chair. There was nobody here. I was tired, so I sat. And that's where I am right now. I can see y'all from right here through my scope. Don't worry, I got the safety on. Okay, it's on now. Tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. I got on my camo jeans. You'd never find me. When you hear about the big shootout and all that, then that'll be me. Randy's note continues.
I'm not against war. I'm a combat veteran. Sit on my tail, watch TV, go to restaurants, and have fond delusional memories about Vietnam. My bedroom closet, I have a trash bag. It's never opened. Been there for years. It has, along with other military mementos, a small green government-issued address book. Marines long ago scrawled their names in it. Half of them never came back from Vietnam. Never had children, grandchildren. Got to finish college or even high school. Many, maybe most, had never had sex, owned a car, traveled more than 50 miles from home. Their lives were stolen. Stolen then, and we're doing it every day. Maybe not the numbers, maybe not on such a grand scale, but the lessons of Vietnam have more than been forgotten. The brightest time in American history, another greatest generation, may well have been the one that stopped an evil and corrupt war. That generation saw the cost. Only the young and the parents of those the war destroyed knew Vietnam. America simply turned away. A nation of, do we call us cowards? Is there another term? Of the 2 to 3 million that survived, 100,000 were seriously physically disabled. 1 million more suffered lifelong post-traumatic stress disorder. Not long after coming home, another 50,000 would die. some of mysterious illnesses, many by suicide. 50,000 or more went to prison, some for a few years, some are still there. By 1972, only a few troops were in Vietnam, fighting a rear guard holding action, while America pretended it had won peace with honor at the bargaining table in Paris. A monster named Henry Kissinger won a Nobel Prize for that farce. Have we no shame? The vast majority of Americans didn't have 30 seconds a day to watch news about the war, not a minute a month to think about it, much less do something, take a stand for what was right. These are the people that love to hear about hippies and airport spitters. These people love Ollie North and John McCain, cartoon heroes for a nation too dead inside to care. Scary terrorists and endless wars are bread and butter for the drugstore Marine and Hanoi John. You don't know them by those names? The monikers they were tagged with by their fellow officers after Vietnam? Carefully hear what they say, that pair of bloated peddlers of death. Are they continually undermining America through the fear and mistrust their every word sows while they rake in millions? Why are men like this, whose pasts reek of the worst abuses imaginable, allowed to dishonor our dead while strutting around playing hero? Why has their real history been buried through stench, though the stench remains? Vietnam was a scam. The South Vietnamese government was brutal and corrupt, hated by all. North Vietnam was never part of a communist conspiracy to infiltrate America, force the evils of communism on our children. When more documents are declassified and the lying slows down, I'm absolutely certain the first Gulf War is going to turn out to be a scam also. It's out there. The reason Saddam invaded Kuwait. When it comes out, the Americans responsible for misleading us into war after war after war will die of old age, honored and respected, with their offshore bank accounts brimming with blood money. The countless dead were forgotten long ago, being the unnewsworthy lot they were. We already know, we and our gutless British cousins, that Bush and Blair and their cronies sent hundreds of thousands to war in 2003 based on not only lies, but a plot to undermine the democratic freedoms of both governments and prestige the Western world in their own image. Totalitarian interventionist, totally owned and operated by an international cabal of financial criminals. Recent as it was, few Americans realize what the Gulf War really brought us. We got that new world order that Pappy Bush promised us in his points of light speech. What we got was an end to America as we know it. A government taking orders from Tel Aviv, a new world order economy now openly looting the world, eating away even America's standards of living, flushing it down the toilet, turning the United States into a debt-ridden third world hellhole. The Romans gave away bread and amused the public with blood-drenched spectacles in the arena. Our bread and circuses game is Islamophobia, phony self-induced terrorism, exploitation of subhuman racial hatreds thinly veiled under the childish misnomer of conservatism. Anyone who isn't suspicious of 9/11, the TV spectacular, whose original cast of 19 now includes thousands, as years of credible research and investigation has proven, will gladly send others to die in their name around the world. Ignorance is complicity. Anyone who doesn't realize the Bush cover story is the most outlandish conspiracy theory in history is capable of cheerleading for any sociopathic political clown from Caligula to Hitler to Cheney. We have to end our war because America can no longer trust itself. With all of America's media outlets owned by defense firms, let's call them war profiteers. Be honest about it. We're citizens of the state of Israel, a huckster nation smaller than Vermont that is the third largest weapons exporter in the world. No American can be certain about anything. What is true or false? What is fact? What is myth? Every day, every American is told two things. Don't trust your government. Don't trust your press. Those things are correct. The problem, of course, is that those that control the message control both the government and the press. The new government they continually offer is always the old government. The new lies are always the old lies. Enemies. New plots. New fears. If what you believe is based on what you hear and see, whether it's an airplane crashing into a building or someone telling you that ending years of corrupt tax abatements for billionaires is going to end the world, well, something's always being kept from you. That something is what is true, what is real. But I saw it. Yes, you saw something, then someone explained it all. What you want to do is ask yourself, who made money from this? Who can control the news? Where do the real conspirators live? Caves in Afghanistan? Or inside the Beltway in Washington? Or the coffee shops of Tel Aviv? Did I forget London? A few months ago, we learned that 824,000 Americans have top secret security clearances. How much do you think those nearly 1 million people know that would shock or sicken you? Are only 10,000 involved in illegal conspiracies? What if every Israeli spy flushed at the same time? Would the Great Lakes suddenly disappear? I hope this isn't news to you, but most of history's wars were started with a false flag attack. A government attacks its own people to justify what it, out of delusion, tells itself is going to be the best for everyone in the long run. The fact that billions, even trillions, are made, not made, really stolen. That's never spoken of. Nobody attacks a nation with 70% of the world's military might. It would only attack itself with a little help from its friends. How's America dealing with Afghanistan? Though a few lunatics are still running around talking about poor dead Osama bin Laden and imaginary Al-Qaeda, the mysterious worldwide conspiracy of cab drivers, waiters, and dishwashers, most Americans have forgotten Afghanistan. What do you say of a generation of Americans who can't say Palestinian without adding terrorist, but watch cluster bombs being dropped on playgrounds in Gaza and are willing to accept it as poor, frightened Israel protecting herself? This is the kind of ignorance that begged 9/11 and was amply rewarded. This is the kind of ignorance that will burn an American city to the ground with a terrorist nuke simply to remove Iran from competition in the oil and gas pipeline business. Oh, newspapers don't report such things. Not on the sports pages, anyway. Over 40 years ago, Americans of conscience went to the streets to end a war. They saved more than just the lives of American soldiers and Vietnamese civilians. They restored America's honor. Control of American education and media, whether by Zionist right-wing fanatics, thieving banksters, or a coalition of evildoers combining all three. It's attempted to rewrite history. We're told that mobs in airports attacked returning soldiers. We're told thousands of Americans died because of protests, not because of Kissinger's lies. Those who know better are still alive. Some still awake. Too many silent. A generation of soldiers, now men and women, returned from war, maimed, crushed, thrown away. 21st century America sees nothing, not the corruption, the narcotics, the lies, the evil in what has gone on so long in the name of the people of the United States. What is war? All war is class struggle. If we still had more communists around, they would remind us. Rich people start wars. Poor people die. Resources are stolen. Banks emptied. All of it hidden behind flag waving and childish scare tactics. War is part of the grander plan. Is war politics or is it economics? At one point in the last 2 years, it was estimated there were as few as 12 potential Al-Qaeda suspects in Afghanistan. The person reading my water meter is a potential suspect. To a paranoid or law enforcement officer, anything that moves is a person of interest. A suspect is a person of interest who isn't sleeping or dead. Thousands of such suspects have been kidnapped and tortured by the United States over the last decade. The vast majority were released. Some with millions in cash to set them up. Some died. A few were railroaded to criminal convictions based on false testimony and phony evidence. Who would want to protest against that? Would you want to die to defend that? Your children already have.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank is a former Catholic priest. He has spent years, I think over 6 years, in federal prison and county jail for protesting against U.S. military policy, U.S. military weapons. Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
All right.
It's a kind of a cool day here in Des Moines.
Oh, yeah?
We've had rain for about a week or so. Nothing to complain about with folks in Florida, your way.
Well, it's a long way from where we are, fortunately, to where
Good.
That storm hit. You know, it's probably 400 wow. miles, but yeah, because we're a big state, very long state.
It is, and it's got a long seashore. I mean, a coastline. My God.
Yeah.
Well, there's really I get your call. I say, okay, what's happened in the last week? this week was a more or less non-eventful week. We're just trying to move along with our lives, continue to do the hospitality. I'm whether it's true or not, I'm convinced that the work of doing this hospitality in itself has merit for healing and moving people from hostility to hospitality. One of the spiritual movements that a guy named Henry Nouwen, some of your folks out there might remember him. He was a Catholic priest, theologian, nice guy, Dominican, wrote a book called Reaching Out.
Hmm.
And there are three different types of spiritual energies, you know.
Hmm.
And one of them is the movement from hostility to hospitality. And it's a great chapter. If I were to say, read something that really explains the benefit and the value of what we do at the Catholic Worker, that chapter, because it basically says that generally we're living in a pretty hostile world where hostility is endemic. We've got our own rages and madnesses that we all have. And then the culture has it too, and the streets do too. And the sheer offering of hospitality to street people is the art of setting some space apart. In this case, it's the first floor at Dingman, inviting people to come in as friends and guests. And we are friends and hosts. So there are two types of people in the world of hospitality. There's the guest and the host.
Okay.
And we're the host, no matter what. People come in, we're here to serve them. The simple things, food, clothing, stuff that we give out.
in
a humane and genuine way, and there are the guests, and they are to receive the gifts in a genuine, humane way. And what we do is we create a space where the hostility that exists on the streets all the time. I mean, you walk outside as a street person, it's a pecking order.
Hmm.
Everybody knows where they stand in that scene.
I bet they do.
Got it. All right, go ahead. I'm just at the house here.
I bet they do have. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
And then the person, the people who come into our house, you know, they don't always act nice, but by far the most of the time they do, because people instinctively act nice when they're treated nicely and they're treated like guests when they're in a home. And the space itself is different than what it is on the streets. And a person who's preyed on can talk to a person who preys on them without any of those that kind of ugly stuff that works out there. It's a hospitable space is basically what we're saying. And it gives people, like our folks who come and visit us, space where they can really heal. By healing, I mean have good, solid human connections, caring connections with other people. Not just us, but with other guests. In fact, most of the time, the other guests are really, guests to guests are the ones who are serving each other in this space. Because they're free to help each other, where all we do is, you know, clean and feed and wash and make sure there's a space for them.
Right.
I find that, and the art of doing hospitality helps with whatever shit you're dealing with yourself and your own world. And it's, in my world, the struggle, the yearly day in, day out struggle for resistance against war and other social injustices, I could not do them as I have without the constant kind of touch base with reality, which is serving a bowl of soup to a hungry person. For me, that's it. It don't get no realer than that. So I'm again blessed about the life I've chosen has given me this rich opportunity to have immediate access to doing the works of mercy, which is the where I get a lot of my strength to continue doing the work for peace and justice.
Mm.
At least that's how it works for me. And it's I think of that. I think of that today as I'm sitting here in the Catholic Worker in the stairwell again with all of the pictures, and I'm staring at the mop and the tub where Eddie puts it, and a bag or a cage of. You know, a bread, you know, that folks will take, and not much left of the food we're giving away today, but we have a meal coming in, and it's just the way it is, life at a Catholic Worker. I find that it has, for me, it has a homing, centering, and balancing thing. Not all the time, but eventually it gets to me, and I'm grateful. Today, I'm grateful. So what, how did that happen? I really don't know. The struggle sure goes on, and we're moving into October. Now we're going to be doing the World Food Prize. So we'll have some kind of faith that we'll have a, Occupy the World Food Prize rally and concert, with Reverend Billy in a couple weeks. So, actually it'll be on Thursday night, the day you call. So you might miss me on the 18th. But we'll catch up on the following week.
Okay.
For sure.
Maybe yes. I should try to call you earlier on the 18th then.
That might be the best way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Chuck?
Well, thank you, Frank.
Not much to say today. All right.
Well, you know, you actually said a lot, because I think that this hospitality that you do may, in fact, be the single thing that makes the most difference in people's lives. I think it's wonderful that you do that.
Well, I'm betting on it, because it justifies, at least it gives the other stuff I do some context. Like, at least I do this. Okay. All right. All right, brother. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dogs got to bark, a mule's got to bray. Soldiers must fight and preachers must pray. And children, I guess, must get their own way the minute that you say no. Why did the kid pour jam on the cat? Raspberry jam all over the cat. Why should the kids do something like that when all that we said was no? My son was once afraid to swim. The water made him wince until I said he mustn't swim. Been swimming ever since. Been swimming ever since. Dogs got to bark, a mule's got to bray. Soldiers must fight and preachers must pray. And children, I guess, must get their own way the minute that you say no. Why did the kids put beans in their ears? No one can hear with beans in their ears. After a while, the reason appears. They did it 'cause we said no. Your daughter brings a young man in and says, do you like him, Pa? Just say that he's a fool, and then you've got a son-in-law. You've got a son-in-law. Sure as the June comes right after May, sure as the night comes right after day, you can be sure the devil's to pay the minute that you say no. Make sure you never say no. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll hear from Jim Fetzer and Thomas Wortman.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Lenore, be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Schneider will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a reporter, a radio show announcer, broadcaster. He's a researcher. He's been researching for years the JFK assassination, and most recently it'd be the 9/11 event, and also Sandy Hook. And Jim is a retired philosophy professor, university professor. And now we're going to hear from Jim Fetzer in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mike, Chuck, great to be back with you guys again. I think it's fair to say that the attempt to weaponize the Me Too movement against the Trump nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, has massively backfired. We now see polls that are showing support for Democrats or Democrat enthusiasm dropping steadily, Republican enthusiasm growing constantly. If there's one issue that could unify the various factions of the Republican Party, it's Democrats trying to defeat a Republican candidate. And it was really completely contrived. The deeper you dig, the more you discover about it. I have republished a number of very important and revealing articles about the case of the Kavanaugh hearings, nicely summed on my new blog. And let me emphasize, I went to announce that I was moving to a new blog. This is about 2 weeks ago, at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, when I discovered it had been deleted, erased, vanished, poof. No notice, no warning, just completely taken out. Fortunately, the 6 to 8 weeks prior to this, we had been moving to a new blog at jamesfetzer.org. And there we had been able to salvage the vast majority of the content of the old blog, which had over 1,100 individual entries. But, of course, the links around the world were shattered. In any case, here a nice summary authored by Patrick McShay. Is it too soon to call Kavanaugh's accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, a liar? The evidence is simply overwhelming. I have covered it repeatedly on my radio show, The Raw Deal, which is Tuesday and Thursday on Revolution Radio from 4 to 6 Eastern, and on the news reports I do, the Goldfish Report with Louisa and Truth Versus News, N-E-W dollar sign with Scott Bennett, a former Army Intel and PSYOPs officer, and Michael J. Anderson, who's a Vietnam veteran who's become a political activist. But it's very clear this attack on Kavanaugh was a complete and total smear. There may be legitimate questions to raise, but fabricating these attacks was, in my opinion, embarrassing, really shameful. And I've published now a great deal about it. It included, for example, that she turns out to have been a liberal activist. She contributed 10 times to Hillary Clinton, to many other Democratic causes. Turns out that she actually, her father had a bankruptcy, which was presided over by Judge Kavanaugh's mother, who was also a judge. These were early issues I was reviewing in the beginning. She participated in, you know, a women's march. I mean, it turns out, and this is quite stunning, that she actually works for Concept Therapeutics in the San Francisco Bay Area, maker of an abortion pill, a $1.2 billion business. She and her husband are both in the medical industry. She's authored 8 articles on abortion drugs. And let me make it very clear. I am 100% for a woman's right to choose. In my opinion, it's the only democratic American alternative. Forcing a woman to carry an unwanted fetus to term is a form of reproductive slavery to which I am opposed 100%. Sociological studies have shown that unwanted children have a propensity to become juvenile delinquents and in their adult lives, criminals, frequently become, you know, arrested, indicted, prosecuted, and serve terms in penitentiaries at taxpayer expense. You know, we have to have a proper process in fabricating. I cannot abide liars, phonies, and cheats. And what we had going on here was a massive orchestrated attack on Kavanaugh, where Dianne Feinstein, first and foremost, appears to be a ringleader. She withheld the letter from Blasey Ford for 6 weeks before the hearing, when it could have been released and become the subject of an behind-the-scenes investigation in a suitable amount of time. It was obviously a bombshell that was intended to create a delay in the hope that by the midterm elections, the Democrats might retake control of the Senate and thereby defeat any subsequent nominees coming from this president whom they so passionately despise. I mean, look, you can't have this kind of malfeasance by prominent members of the Senate Judiciary Committee who are frankly doing themselves immeasurable harm. Cory Booker has been, you know, making outrageous statements, as has this the woman from California, Kamala Harris, who would like to become candidates for president in 2020, but I think their prospects are extremely dim, where we now have, in fact, efforts to try to resurrect the belief in the blue wave, but I tell you, it isn't going to happen. In fact, it turns out, you know, Blasey Ford couldn't remember where it happened, when it happened, who was involved. She identified 4 people, all of whom were unable to confirm her claim. Her best friend Leland Kaiser even suggested she thought she had political motivation, which I think is overwhelmingly apparent. It was really a matter of groping. And in fact, the Democrats went so far as to submit a request to the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office to investigate, but it turned out that the offenses involved were misdemeanors, that they had a one-year statute of limitation, that had it been reported by 1983 for the offense allegedly taking place in 1982, then it could have been investigated, but it's long past. Not only were all those the case, but the other two allegations are equally ridiculous. This woman, Ramirez, who claimed that Kavanaugh had exposed himself to her at Yale during a party. The New York Times, NBC, and the Washington Post, which have been number one, number two, and number three in assailing Kavanaugh and attacking Trump, did a dragnet to try to find anyone who could confirm Ramirez's allegations. It didn't happen. They didn't come up with anything to support it. Nobody was able to support it. And what we have then was the even more outrageous case of this woman, Swetnick, claiming that even though she graduated from high school in 1980, that she was nevertheless going back in 1982 to high school parties where she observed Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge. She thought drugging girls in order to have gang rapes take place. I mean, this was ridiculous on its face. I mean, number one, what is a woman who's already in college doing going back to high school parties? Number two, if she observed this happen even one time, why would she not have reported it to the police promptly? Third, why would she go back repeatedly as many as 10 times only to claim she herself had been assaulted? I believe the dam burst when this allegation came place and was handled by the lawyer for this this promo star who has been represented by this attorney Avenatti, who's promoting himself to run for president. I think that his prospects are just as bad as those of Bookie Cory Booker and Kamala Harris. The Avenatti's not going anywhere. But once those allegations came out, I think it became obvious there was a pattern here. They started with the lower level allegations by a woman who's, you know, some kind of faculty member, a researcher at Palo Alto University or even for Stanford. And then they elevate to him exposing himself at Yale and then to this gross thing about gang rapes. I mean, it was just too clever by half, completely outrageous. No one believed it. It even turns out, by the way, if you dig deep, that Blasey Ford's father was working for the CIA and that she is running a program at Stanford that appears to be tied in. And when you have, the effects are actually going to be, in my opinion, catastrophic for the Democratic Party. I mean, not only is there going to be no blue wave, there's going to be a very considerable red wave where I predict that as many as the Republicans are going to gain as many as 3 to 5 seats in the Senate, and in the House is going to run roughly even. The Democrats may pick up a couple of seats in the House, but not enough to change. Where, of course, they've been threatening to undertake impeachment proceedings against Kavanaugh, one more strike against him because the public isn't going for it. I think the Democrats have not just shot themselves in both feet, but actually, in relation to the midterms, shot themselves in the head. We shall see. It's around the corner now. And when I'm back with you again next month, Mike and Chuck, I'll pick up on the consequences. We'll see whether I have it right.
Our next guest of the show is Thomas Wertmann. Thomas Wertmann is the director of the Ohio MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. We're going to try and attempt to contact Thomas Wertmann right now in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello?
Well, hello, Thomas. It's Chuck and Mike, the new American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. What we're going to do this week is something a little bit different. When you do a UFO investigations, a high percentage of the time you may be basically chasing sometimes what we call lights in the sky, something being observed from a great distance away, something not that close. And I always tell my investigators that one of the things you want to do is when you work in a case, you always want to do it the best you can to keep honing your skills. So when something really big comes along, you're prepared for it. And about 5 years ago, I received a phone call from MUFON International. And it was before I became state director. And they were requesting me to do an investigation for them. They'd contacted their state director at that time and said that they wanted to use me. And she said, what for? And they said, well, you don't really have a need to know. And she was kind of puzzled by that. But then they called me up and said, what we want you to do is we want you to do an interview with an individual who claims to be a witness of an autopsy at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And this goes back a number of years ago, back into the 1980s. And I'm like, really? You want me to talk to a witness that supposedly, you know, walked in an autopsy? Sure. This is what we want you to do. So what I did is I got the individual's contact information. I called him up, and he didn't want to meet at his house. He wanted to meet in a public location, just because of fear somebody may be watching or monitoring him on there. He wanted to be very public. So what we did is we met at a restaurant, and I set up basically a hidden camera inside of a jacket and recorded the whole event. And when we walked into the restaurant, the individual met me along with his wife, and she looked at me like something was really wrong. And I'm like, excuse me, but what's wrong? And she goes, you have a very strange aura around your body. I said, okay. And the individual said also, he says, just so you know, he says, my wife's a psychic. Oh, okay, I'll roll with that. And we sat down, we did the interview. And during the interview, he described being a medical assistant at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. He produced documentation showing U.S. stations at the base at that time. He also produced documentation indicating that he was also a medical assistant like he claimed to be. And he said during his time down there, he was going in and out of the hospital in the base, and he said there's an area down there like a morgue. And he kept going in and out of this morgue area to get supplies. And when he went through there, he noticed that there appeared to be a vault. The vault was to store bodies in. And it appeared that the vault had a lock that was haphazardly welded on there. He said it looked almost like somebody got a welder and welded this lock on, like almost an emergency purpose on there, that it wasn't really planned. And he says every time he'd go in and out of the morgue area, he says that vault was always locked and secured. On one particular occasion, he went down there, and he goes walk in the morgue to get some medical supplies like he always did. And he looked over, and the vault door was open. He didn't see anything inside, but he says the door was wide open. He turned over and looked in the room where they were doing examinations for, like, autopsies. And he says inside that room happened to be higher-ranking military personnel all gathered around the table. And he was completely shocked when he says he looked at the table itself, and on the table was not a human, but it appeared to be an alien body, as to what we would describe as being a gray. He says he looked at the body, he looked up at the military personnel, and next thing he says, they started screaming at him, get out of here, who do you think, what are you doing, why are you walking in here, get out. And he says, of course, he ran out as fast as he could. Well, in the interview, I tried to get as much information about that event as I could. And then afterwards, I said, well, what happened after this event happened? He goes, well, nobody talked to him. He says, they just told him, stay out, don't come back. And I said, you mean they didn't talk to you and didn't say, forget what happened, don't describe what happened? He goes, no, he says, nothing like that. They just basically told him to get out of that area. And he goes, I've remembered this all these years, and it's been in the back of my mind. And he says, I'm getting a little bit older now. And he goes, I had to get this out in the open. He says, because this has been driving me crazy all these years. He said, the only person I've ever told is my wife. But he says, I just had to come out and tell somebody else. Well, when you get a story like this, I mean, you don't have the physical evidence in front of you. What you have is an interesting story from an individual and documentation showing that he was at the base at that time. And you're always looking for correlating facts to present, potentially come and tie into this whole event. Well, a lot of us know that Wright-Patterson has been rumored for years that this is where they took craft at after the Roswell crash. This is potentially where the bodies went after the Roswell crash. Again, those stories have existed for years. But I've always looked for more information beyond that. Well, lo and behold, I was a member of a Cleveland group here in Ohio, and it had a long history going back to the 1950s and still in existence. And there's been stories that have come out of that group over the years that, again, you think, okay, these are great stories, but you look for them to tie into something. Well, one individual's name who was involved with the group as a treasurer was a gentleman named Tycho. He was the treasurer of the group. He's involved with the group for a number of years, but he was kind of secretive about the fact on what he did for a living outside of the group. He didn't really talk that much about it. He came in dressed in basically blue jeans, did his work for the group, and left. Well, Tycho wasn't just a regular individual. He was a doctor. His specialty was pathology. And the stories I've heard about the individual on there is he was a pathologist with the Cleveland Clinic. The Cleveland Clinic, for years, has been one of the top hospitals in the country, not only for heart and other ailments on there, but also in pathology. One of the stories that came out from the group was the fact that this Dr. Tycho was at one time summoned down to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. He was not only summoned down there, but a lot of other individuals were summoned down at the same time. And it appeared that they all had various specialties related back to the human body. The way the story goes, they're all guided into a room. They were given time to examine individually on there a body that was not human. The body in this case was alien. And what they reportedly did, they made notes describing what their interpretation of this being was, the basic anatomy is they're specially related on there. They documented everything. And according to the story on there, that once they got done documenting everything, they were told to turn their papers in and basically forget everything that they'd talked about. And the ones that were in charge of this whole procedure were not military. There was military there, but the ones that were in charge were all basically wearing suits and ties. They were not in any military garb whatsoever. So it appeared outside sources were in charge of this whole operation, which went back to potentially an autopsy at a military base. Well, one of the things I've been trying to do is see if I can find correlating information documenting when this autopsy took place and see if it took place around the same time that this individual happened to be a medical assistant down at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So I'm canvassing everybody I know that has heard stories about similar events on there and seeing what I can do to get as much information as possible to see if I can put all the pieces of this puzzle together. The doctor did pass away. He passed away probably about 8 to 10 years ago or more. And the family, I've been able to get information from regarding the whole event. One of the things I'm also looking into is the fact that this Dr. Tycho, one of the individuals in the group said he had some discussions with him on there. And he was shown a picture of a magazine, something like the National Enquirer. Now, he said, obviously, the picture was a hoax, a phony picture on there. But what captured his attention the most is what the story behind the picture. It was describing basically the anatomy of this creature. And this anatomy was not quite human. It had characteristics that wouldn't be associated with a human, such as a two-chambered heart. The way I understand it, a chambered heart is not associated with a human, but something more of a fish. It's how it goes along with, I guess, how it converts the oxygen. A fish uses gill system on air where we have lungs. And what he was fascinated about was this article was describing a two-chambered heart. And it wasn't just a fascination like, okay, that's unusual. It appeared almost like he'd had knowledge of something along those lines. And he's looking at this article like, wow, how did they know all this in this magazine like the National Enquirer? Did they maybe get a leak of some actual information or hear stories from somebody who might have been there at that time? He just didn't know. So I'm looking to see if there's ways to tie this whole thing together. And one of the things that kind of got me after I did my interview with this individual down at this restaurant, we got up to leave. As we got up to leave, his wife gave me one of these really, really strange looks again. And I said, is there anything wrong again? And she goes, well, just to let you know, they're not done with you. I said, done with me? Who are you talking about? And she goes, you know who they are. Well, one of the things I haven't talked about on your show in there in the past is I've had some of my own experiences.
Thomas, unfortunately, you're going to have to tell us about your own experiences next time because...
We can do that.
Fun.
Okay, we can do that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That was really interesting. I really appreciate having you on the show each month, and this was an especially good one, so thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The American dream has dangled before our eyes for over 200 years. The American dream is the goal that we Americans hold on to when everything else is gone. The American dream is our ideal. Too bad it's just a dream. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, eyes blazing, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. We pick up our story after Michael M., staff member at Sun God Group Home, has sped off on his moped to tell the people at the workshop that there's a sit-down strike taking place in the Sun God driveway, and they will be a little late. On his way, he swerved to miss a little girl, jumped the curb, and rammed his blue flake helmet into a war memorial for World War II at the city park, breaking the war memorial. And now the National Guard and police have stormed the park and taken Michael M. away in a National Guard helicopter. Where did they take him? Let's find out, shall we? Michael M. is in prison for having rammed World War II with a blue flake helmet, but he loves Homeland, and all he really wants to do is get free so he can get registered for the Home Helper Show and make his wife proud and his children happy. On Tuesday afternoon, a couple sat on their front porch rocking, enjoying the sun, holding paper plates to their brows against the glare. On the sidewalk, a young boy wearing a red and blue Twins ball cap turned backward, balanced on a skateboard, headed downhill. Around the corner, a cat scampered across the street, headed for the shade, paused in the middle to scratch and sniff a flat robin. Two NASCAR flags, number 8 and number 3, stuck out from the white front porches on opposite sides of the street, like hard-ons of two Down syndrome kids on the playground. A green leaf fluttered straight down. In the front window of the cafe, a group of older men in colored seed corn caps sipped coffee, with old hands overmatching the daisy cups. A man held on as he rode a green mower, swathing back and forth over the side lawn of the Reformed Church. Blue jay calls pierced the air at long intervals, like boat horns in a fog of dense boredom. Two young mother walkers hustled along, pumping arms, smiling at every opportunity. Two shirtless college summer workers from the construction crew at the local high school gymnasium project paused to watch, hands on hips. A group of kids sat in the middle of the concrete basketball court at the park with the ball in the middle of the circle. A young man locked the door of the closed Mexican grocery store, wiped his brow, got on his daughter's pink bicycle to head home. Without noticing, he passed a series of Permashave-style road signs in black and white. Boo! Be afraid. Stay awake, stay alert. Tell somebody. What's that? Stop, drop, and roll. On the cover of the August 15, 1959 Saturday Evening Post is an illustration of a young couple pitched against each other, leaning back against a tree, dreamy gazes in their eyes as they stare into the night sky overhead. They see dot sketches, perhaps formed by the stars of their future. Appliances, toasters, washers, dryers, can openers, home, swimming pool, refrigerator with ice dispenser. Maybe those dreams have been put there by advertising or CIA implants or the uncle from Paducah. But it's certain they do not realize that those are not elective items. Those modern conveniences are mandatory dreams, so to speak. From the backside of that dream of that dark blue night curtain, the flip side of that 45 playing Johnny Angel is a prison camp, an American prison camp in the Midwest. With corn on the left, soybeans on the right, a big orange moon on a summer night, with the electronic eavesdropping equipment visible on the man's nose as he stares down at a big sparkling red DeSoto humming down a deserted highway, with Grandma and Grandpa Jones listening to the ball game on the radio with their hands out the window trying to catch the wind. The locusts wavered and the wind died down. The announcers signed off. The white-tailed deer stood in the field listening. The red sun shined on the barn sides, and the new kittens licked at the milk left in the bowl by the back door. Tractors headed off down the lane for the fields, and a UPS truck left behind a wake of dust and smoke. The truck skidded to a stop to make the corner up Gitmo's Lane. They called it Gitmo's, because the farm, well, small ranch, really, once belonged to a paraplegic rancher, farmer, really, name of Morris. When the government bought the property, the name stayed, since the guards were all from around here. Not much remained of the old place. It was more a parking lot now than a working farm or ranch. It had a husband and wife and seven children running around everywhere, enough to keep the grass down without mowing. Still had dogs, though. A chain-link fence and razor wire, concrete pads, and long kennels topped with more razor wire. There were guard towers. In fact, the towers and concrete enticed more than one small airplane into landing, only to zoom back off as soon as they saw the Doberman baggage handlers. Camp Gitmo's was divided into units, each with its own ground, staff, rules, and uniforms. Michael M. was assigned a unit, Traitor Dickwad. The other units were Dumbass, Wet the Bed, Faggots, Queers, Cowheads, Sand Nigger, Corn Nigger, Jap, Gook, Kraut, Wetback, French Nigger, Retard, Coon, Disappeared, Canuck, Santiago Stadium. M. knelt on the cement run of his kennel. He wore only white panties with small red roses. His hands were tied behind his back with plastic cuffs, and he wore a black hood over his head. Inside M's kennel stood two guards, one black, one white. One was tall with large arms, the other shorter, a little thinner maybe. They stood on both sides of him, behind him, their hands on their hips, down the line of kennels, and heard children's voices, not play sounds, frightened. He then heard dogs and the gruff voices of male guards. Then the children cried. The dogs barked some more and the guards shouted, and there were cracks and snaps and pops, and then the kids did not cry. M's body was lathered in sweat. His knees were numb. His back ached and spasmed. He really, really needed to maintain his position as long as he could in order to keep from being beaten again. Large black speakers set just outside the kennels on the cement walking path played Toby Keith yelping at full blast. In the kennel behind him, the guards worked to arrange wires to the fingers and testicles and into the anus of a man M understood to be a baker. A woman guard with a tattoo of a rose on her bicep and a dolphin earring lugged in a plastic wash tub of ice water that she placed in front of the man, who sat on a metal chair with slats through which the wires ran. He sat out on the cement run of his kennel like somebody out enjoying the sun in America. He had a hood over his head. His white rose panties were pulled to his knees. The speaker just outside his kennel now blasted, "I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free," at number 10 volume. The man was commanded to put his feet into the water. "Now!" M heard the squeals and gurgling noises and body jerks of the man each time they made him stick his feet in the water. Then the guards started to get into it. They pelted the guy with water balloons, poured ice water over his head. They dipped a hot dog in ketchup, attached it to the man's penis using postal rubber bands, and let three of the Dobermans into the kennel run. M knelt in the blood from his own knees, wanting water, being afraid they would think to answer him the same way they had responded to his neighbor's request for a drink. "Next thing I realized," said Tom Otherfield in a whisper to his hood, "I was bouncing along the back of a truck. My hands and feet were bound. There were others with me. Couldn't see them. I was blindfolded, had some oily rag in my mouth. Couldn't hardly breathe. The fumes made my eyes water. I thought I'd throw up and drown in my own vomit. And who would give a measly shit?" Otherfield knelt on the cement run of his kennel in anus and penis bloodstains from yesterday's baker barbecue. Michael M. knelt on the other side of the wire mesh. They each faced toward the speakers outside the run, now blasting Rush Limbaugh at them from 10 feet away. They smelled burned or burning flesh from somewhere, each wondering how they knew what it was. Neither saying anything to the other about it. M repositioned his knees. He nodded slightly to let other people know that he was listening. "This country has no relation," he hissed. "Would not be recognizable to our founding fathers. There's a private army nobody knows about. Nobody has any control over what they do, how much money they get. They do what they want, whenever they want. 40% of the military budget is secret." But to lower his head to his chest to cough. "Who made that rule? It's funny. Goddamn hilarious." Otherfield paused and thought it might be his turn to talk. "I need to be on the Home Helper show," he said. "What? That show where they come in and fix up your home. It's on TV." "Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard of it. You're going to be on it? When? I'd like to watch." No, I have to register first. I'm not registered, I'm whispered. First, you have to be registered. Other people asked, how do you get registered? Just send it in. I have to get word to my wife, he hissed, to get us registered. Of course, said other people. Guard walked by in heavy boots, making sure to scuff his heels on the cement so the prisoners would know he was coming, so they would stop talking and he wouldn't have to work overtime, which almost the edge of his shift. He didn't want to have to discipline them. He wanted to get home, take his kids to the park. Money, Hutterfield whispered. What's it up? Eyes. Military. To hell with the poor. Bombs. Then call it all Christian. Wow. You know? Huh? You know? You got more news right here. Taking a walk in the dark. Starting a conversation with a man surrounded by pigeons. And you do by reading the New York Times. The what? All the while, when the neighborhoods wake up, go to sleep dreaming of a new kitchen. Swimming pool, said I. What? Said Utterfield. And kitchen. I put his face right in the sun to try to see anything through his black hood. People in charge couldn't dream up a better deal than that, said Utterfield. Said the guard on his way back. Shut the F up, he hissed. What? Said M. What'd you say? M knelt in his run. Utterfield asked him if he still needed to get registered. Yeah. The pool would be great, said Utterfield. I know. Why don't you go? Go? Get registered. Get registered? Like how? Ask the guards. Ask them what? You can go. Tell them you need to get registered for a new pool. Be on television. F you. F me? No, really. Yeah, right. Utterfield shuffled over on his knees. Offer them something. They're not unreasonable. Ah! The cries of someone in another kennel grouping caused M to go rigid involuntarily. Offer? They like candy, said Utterfield. Baubles. Trinkets. Baubles, M thought. Put his chin to his chest. Looked down at his hood and his putty white doughy stomach and his rose panties and scab knees. They like gold, said Utterfield. Gold teeth. Gold fillings. Well, I didn't need to hear that, said him. 4:30, a guard brought two pans into M's run, placed them on the cement. One was filled to the brim with warm water. The other had a mush, not unlike soggy dog food. Guard pulled M's hood up so he could lean over to eat, careful as always not to fall in face first. When M had finished his meal, the guard took him under the arm to pull him to his feet and walk him to his cage. When the guard let him in, M crawled to his bed, the box being too short to allow him to stand. M now slept on a wire mattress without handcuffs or hood, with a 5-gallon bucket for his restroom, a wash rag that was dipped in cold water once in a while, then set back into the cage so he could freshen up. As M lay on his back in the darkness of his wooden box, its crisscross pattern formed in his back and arms and legs. Outside, he could hear the speakers repeating the sound of an AM radio dial being continually changed. He heard shouting as he did every night, plus screams, cries, groans, barking. M thought of his children, the way the four-year-old giggled when you pushed him on the swing, how the two-year-old walked into the kitchen in the morning with her footy pajamas clutching her baby doll. Tried to remember his wife's face, but got only her hair, her body, her hands. The way she liked to keep her fingernails long and different colors. He lay there. Maybe he fell asleep. Then he heard a dog bark. An owl hoot in response. M heard footsteps on the cement and keys. The door opened outward, tossing a light from the tower under the box floor. The guard threw down a pile of clothes. Go ahead. M crawled up slowly, tentatively put on his t-shirt, socks, tennis shoes, and jeans with small tears and bloodstains from the crash into the war memorial. What's happening? M asked. Guard shined a flashlight into his own hand, showed two gold teeth, an open pack of juicy fruit gum, and three buttons, one red, one green, one silver. You're free to go, said another guard outside the door. And let one guard escort him out of the unit. They heard dogs barking and whining. The full moon showed the guard towers, razor wire, box latrines in an elegant light. The guard, rifle slung over his shoulder, walked with M along the long dirt lane to the mailbox in the shape of a tractor. He nodded down the road, turned to walk slowly back, kicking up dirt with a purpose on each left foot stride. M gazed back at the prison camp, at the light still on in the warden's living room, and how the smoke from the guard quarters rose straight up. The big flag at the checkpoint hung limp. No wind. He sighed, turned toward the road, and began walking, scuffling, kicking at rocks and rifts. He began to hum, then sing. I'll gladly stand right next to you and defend her. M kept walking along the side of the gravel country road. He wondered how far he was from homeland or anywhere. He recalled all the towns and fields and the smells of pigs and cows they'd flown over to get here. He wondered if he could walk that far back. Probably not, he said out loud. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Remember, it's listener-supported radio, so head over to freedomslips.com and use that donation button. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks to you, Chuck, for all you did to make this show happen, all the interviews, all the work. And thanks to our guests, Jim Fetzer, Thomas Wortman, Phil Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests. Also, the show archives, newdream.us. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Teen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Good night, everyone.
See it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat masses, eating and drink themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio.